Hey. Well, thank you. I think I'm set. I've got all this.
This is Nick Fish's accomplishment. As far as I'm concerned, you can retire now.
Before you blame me, the mayor elect.
Don't you point at me and start raising your voice at me.
The mayor elect may not be fully on board. Let's don't point at me.
He's great.
He's worse.
These are powerful.
Those are horrible.
I realize you have more padding than I do to begin with.
Well, that's just outrageous.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Portland City Council. Before we begin the regular part of our proceedings as the council, I wanted to recognize a group of young people for their efforts. And it's the boys' lacrosse team from Lincoln High School. So Will Harris is the coach, and here's these young men that won. Over the last year, we've been bringing in young people who've excelled at in academics and in sports, and today we're honoring the boys, the Lincoln boys lacrosse team for their state championship. The lacrosse team started in 1999 at Lincoln, and at the time it was sort of a novelty, but since then it's become a very popular sport in many different area high schools. Here's a quote from a referee about Lincoln's program. Lincoln won all three games in a California tournament. The Lincoln coaches were very good, and the players were super skilled and classy. Lincoln really represented Oregon well. So I'm pleased to welcome the team with head coach Will Harris, who is also the development director for JOIN, a program that helps people move from the streets to housing. The team can gather around council while I read this proclamation. And this is an official proclamation of the city of Portland. Whereas lacrosse is the oldest sport in North America and was first played by the Native Americans to stay healthy and solve conflicts, and whereas the sport was adopted by the French and is now popular amongst people across Canada and the USA, whereas Portland celebrates a rich and exciting lacrosse culture that attracts people from all walks of life and maintaining a fun and competitive environment for all participants, and the city of Portland rejoices in the sheer dedication to school, sport, and community that the student athletes at Lincoln exemplify so well. Excuse me, that was my alma mater, and I just kind of
put that in there.
Wishful thinking on my part, obviously. And whereas Lincoln boys team won the 2008 men's lacrosse state championship and has successfully fostered a program dedicated to excellence for many student athletes to come. Now, therefore, I, Tom Potter, mayor of the city of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim June 11th, 2008, to be Lincoln High School Boys Lacrosse Day of Appreciation in Portland and encourage all residents to observe this day. Congratulations.
Yes.
Let's go down front and pose with these young men.
Oh, I want next to Harris on that side.
Yeah, squish in. Okay, a little more in together. Okay. Come on, guys. A little more. Okay, there we go. One, two. Oh. There we go. Awesome. All right.
He's got a few other changes in mind.
What else is he going to do?
Now you know how we felt when you arrived.
I didn't change the council chambers.
Don't stir the pot, okay? I see how this works.
He was just saying a candle, a glass of wine.
I see how this works. We're moving you here and Saltzman there, man. I see how you stir the pot.
Before we begin the official proceedings, I forgot to mention some of you may have noticed we've got a new city commissioner, and it's Commissioner Nick Fish. Could we all give him a hand of welcome? And since Nick has a child at Lincoln, he wanted to make a comment about this.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to say how proud we are at Lincoln of the boys lacrosse team. My daughter is a freshman and plays soccer. Lincoln has championship soccer now, lacrosse teams. But I've waited 20-something years to quote Buddy Beardmore, who was the famous coach of the Maryland Terrapins national championship men's lacrosse team, who had a saying about being the best on the field and off the field. And I think these young men epitomize that, being student athletes and representing our city so well. So as the father of a freshman at Lincoln, I just wanted to add my congratulations to their work.
Thank you. City Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams.
Good morning. Here.
Fish.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Potter.
Here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity they are authorized to represent. Please read the first communication.
Item 761, request of Thomas Bruner to address Council regarding Red Cross and homeless winter shelter.
Good morning.
Good morning, Thomas.
I'm Thomas Bruner. I'm the CEO of the American Red Cross Oregon Trail Chapter, headquartered here in Portland. And I'm also the regional executive for all American Red Cross chapters in Oregon. And I came here this morning to thank you, number one. Number two, to applaud your innovation and continued commitment to our city's homeless population. And three, to report back to you on the results of an exciting new partnership between the American Red Cross and the city of Portland last winter. Our job at the Red Cross is, at the end of the day, about two things. We're working to save people's lives and to rebuild people's lives. And early last fall, the city came to us and explained to us that many winters, there are homeless people who die on the streets of Portland during severe weather conditions. And that in other years, even when homeless people don't die, there are homeless people who are in poor and fragile health whose condition is made worse and who get sicker as a result of severe weather conditions. And that there was an incredible need to do more inclement weather sheltering during the winter season. And would we be interested in being part of the solution? And we said, absolutely yes. So we signed a contract. It ran from November 1 through March 31. It was for $40,000. We ended up spending about $100,000. And we entered into it not knowing exactly how often or where or the level of need or the number of people that would actually be reached. But we entered into it because we wanted to help. Quick facts. Our warming centers, are you clicking the slides? Am I clicking slides? Can somebody click a slide? Can somebody click a slide for me? There you go. Leave it to a young AmeriCorps volunteer to click slides for me. So the goal, next slide please. The goal was to be as barrier-free as possible. Couples were welcome. Families were welcome. Pets were welcome. Shopping carts, boxes, children were welcome. Shelters, warming centers were open from 7 in the morning. 7 at night to 7 in the morning, and people could come and go as they saw fit. And the idea was that as few barriers, the better. Then we actually secured the use of 5 facilities, and you see them listed, Estate Hotel, Calvary Christian, Foursquare Church, St. Francis, and the Mead Building. So this was a brand new partnership for us. So what happened as a result? Next slide. On 19 different nights, we were activated, and the city made the call to activate per our contract, 19 different nights. And on most of those 19 nights, we were operating 3 different emergency warming centers in different locations. And over those 19 nights, 2,651 overnight stays. A quarter were women, 148 couples, and 58 pets. We'd never done this before. This was a leap of faith for us and for you. And thank you for thinking to come to us and ask us to be part of the solution. Thanks for being innovative. Thanks for looking for new and different ways to serve your homeless population. I want to introduce 4 people quickly who helped make this service happen. Rose Bottles, one of our AmeriCorps volunteers, Stephanie Morgan, our Health and Safety Director. Where's Stephanie? Eric Corliss is our new Emergency Services Director. And Aman Kubram is another AmeriCorps volunteer who was absolutely instrumental in making this happen. So thank you very much. It was a successful partnership in our view, and we look forward to working with you on this project moving forward and other projects as well.
Thank you very much, Thomas.
You're welcome.
Mayor, can I make a, yes. I want to connect a couple dots here.
Okay.
Is Commander Mike Reese still hidden around the corner there?
Yeah.
Mike, can you come forward here a little bit? So this idea, because I want people to understand what community policing really means. Because this idea, Mayor Potter, as you well know, is an example of community policing. The city council did not come up with the idea to call you. It was Mike Reese and his subordinates, Officer Jeff Myers, who contacted me and said, we have an issue with people sleeping outside that we think we need to address by opening up Red Cross shelters. So I went to the mayor, and the mayor with me co-sponsored the resolution to introduce to get the money to open it up. So I just think I'm going to start irritating people by connecting these dots for a long time now. When we do things that are really thoughtful and really part of a larger strategy, I'm learning not everybody knows, including the police bureau, that what we're doing. This is an example of on-the-ground community policing. And I really am proud of the work that you did, and I really appreciate Commander Reese's leadership in allowing this kind of thing, not only allowing his officers to think like this, but to be proactive enough to get in the middle of it and make it happen. Because it not only changes people's lives, I believe it saves people's lives.
Yeah, absolutely.
And by the way, I love the Red Cross anyway.
Well, we love you.
When I was in the fire bureau, and I was a young firefighter, 2:30 in the morning, 20 degrees outside, my hands were frozen solid from the water. We'd turn around and there'd be this van there. It was a Red Cross, and they had coffee and donuts that they gave us. So when I became president of the fire union in 1986, every year we donated $10,000 to Red Cross, and I think they still do that.
That's wonderful. Thank you very much.
So much appreciate your work in our
community. Thank you very much. But you, I thank you because you are the decision makers and the policy leaders, and it happened ultimately because you wanted it to happen, and thank you, sir, very much. And BHCD was critically important, Will and his whole team, and Leora Berry. Very innovative, forward-leaning, out of the box. It was a wonderful, wonderful experience.
Thank you. Thanks,
very
Mike.
Welcome.
Thanks,
very much.
Commander. Thank you, Thomas. Please read the next.
Item 762, request of Patrick Nolan to address council regarding anti-camping and sit lie.
You have to, excuse me, give those to the clerk. Thank you. Did you want those to be up there too, Patrick?
Oh, they'll go over there when I'm done.
Okay.
Is it okay?
Please go ahead.
Yeah. Mayor Potter, commissioners, my name is Patrick Nolan. I'm the community organizer at Sisters of the Road.
Thank you.
We have come here today to ask you to end the anti-camping and sit lie laws. We, Street Roots and Sisters of the Road, have felt the outcry of our community supporting this cause. Part of that outcry comes in the form of 1,950 signed, unduplicated postcards, hand-delivered to, or mailed to us by the people of our city. These postcards come from all over, business owners, people living without housing, local politicians, and citizens from every economic background. Each person that took the time to write is a murmur, part of the louder voice, a louder voice that demands our rights. These laws, or similar laws, are being fought up and down the West Coast. Each city, whether it's Fresno, Seattle, Los Angeles, the Bay Area, are all fighting to repeal laws that criminalize people for doing nothing more than trying to exist. Portland has a chance to be at the forefront of this march towards civil rights for all, because Portland belongs to all of us. You, our city councilor, are experienced, understanding people, knowing by years of practice what will work and also what will not. We are offering you that chance to show that today by repealing these two abhorrent laws, laws that will never do anything but continue to criminalize people based only on the fact that they have no place to call their own. Between these two laws, sit lie and anti-camping, it is effectively illegal to be homeless in Portland's downtown core. The sit lie law has been in effect since August of 2007. Not once has a person who was not homeless been cited. Not once. Our city council, you, the guidepost of our community, admits that we do not have enough low-income housing units or shelter beds to house everyone who sleeps outside. Yet we continue to criminalize people for merely meeting basic human needs, sleep and rest. We know that you, our city council, follow the lead of our community. We offer you that chance today. Repeal these laws. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, folks. Please clean up, pick up those after you're done.
Thank you.
Please go ahead and call the next.
Item 763, request of John Rasmussen to address council regarding Selwood Combined Sewer Overflow Big Pipe Project.
Good morning. Thank you for allowing me this time to speak to you this morning. I'm here to talk a little bit about the sewage project. We currently have a proposal to site a sewage pump station in our neighborhood. I currently live in Selwood neighborhood. My name is John Rasmussen. I'm at 8427 Southeast 7th Avenue. There have been several proposed sewage pump sites based in our neighborhood. I provided a map. This site station will have a 12,000 square foot footprint, will house two buildings, and one of those buildings will be a generator housing for times when there's power outage. These generators will be exercised once a month. One of the proposed sites that was given to us, site number 6, would have taken my house away. Currently, the proposed site is site number 4. I believe that site number 4 is a poor choice. This site is too close to my house, too close to my neighbors at the Waverly Condominiums. It will be smelly, it will be loud, it will disrupt our current view of the river, and it will be one of the most expensive sites to build as proposed by BES. This smell and sound will also affect the surrounding neighborhoods. Site 3, I believe, is a better choice. It is closer to the sewer line that it needs to tap into, and it is the furthest away from the majority of people. Site 3 is also the preferred site stated by the BES engineers. There are also other viable sites that were not selected in the site selection process. If you view Site 7 on the map, that's currently right next to one of the sewage lines and was never considered in this. I would just like to bring that to your attention. Also, one last thing I would like to add is that I will continue to fight the siting for Site 4 and see that we move it to a site that is more appropriate that will affect the least amount of people in the neighborhood. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Quick question. What are the terms of Site 3, and this is an issue that's being worked through one of my bureaus, BES, and we don't have support for any of the sites. From everybody, and there's always that's always the case. What do the neighbors adjacent to Site 3 have to say about Site 3?
I haven't talked to the houses straight across from Site 3. The Portland Rowing Club has pushed from Site 3 to Site 4.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Please read the next.
764, request of Mike Shangle to address council regarding siting of the combined sewer overflow facility in Selwood.
Thank you for being here. When you speak, state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Good morning. I'm Mike Shangle. I live at 525 Southeast Marion Street in Selwood, also known as the Waverly Landing Condominium Complex. I'm the president of the Homeowners Association. I represent 24 homeowners that live in the Waverly Landing Complex. And BES has asked you to approve siting the Selwood Sewer Pump Station on Site 4. We're here to appeal their choice of sites. So, for starters, let me tell you why the station should not be sited on Site 4. The Bureau's decision was made without our opportunity, the Waverly Landing condominium owners, to provide input into the siting process, even though our facility is the closest to the site. I have submitted one photo to Commissioner Adams. He can share that if he wishes. That shows you basically the distance from the proposed site for to our condominium building versus to the houseboats at the Portland Rowing Club. The Portland Rowing Club is the one who opposes Site 3 and who is promoting Site 4. And I think you'll see that if you have a chance to look at those pictures, that the site on Site 4, the condominium complex, is much closer to our condominiums than it is to the Rowing Club houseboats. In addition to the visual impact, there will be odors and noise problems to deal with. Our 24-unit complex has an approximate market value of $12 million. Locating the pump station next to us will, in all likelihood, result in a decline in property values for our homeowners. The BES is on record as saying that this site, Site 4, will be more expensive than the other two sites to build on. This site, again, Site 4, is farther from the Lentz trunk line and its outfall than Site 3. This is a criterion that the BES considers unfavorable. So why should the station be sited on Site 3? Site 3 is roughly equidistant between the rowing club and the condominiums. This creates a more equitable sharing of the negative impacts created by the pump facility. The site is closer to the Lentz trunk line and southfall. These are criteria that BES considers favorable to the project. The BES is on record as saying the site would be less expensive of the two sites to build on. There is a Harney Street right-of-way available on Site 3 for the city to use to meet part of its land needs for the project.
Your time is up, sir. Did you want to conclude any statement?
Just to thank you for your time.
Thanks. And just to appreciate you taking the time to come testify before us, the issue is still very much under review. I was briefed on it week before last, so I have not made any decisions on it. And I know there was a screw-up on notification, so I've asked BS to go out and do additional community outreach work. So I will definitely keep you posted. We have your contact information.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
765, request of Laura Orr to address council regarding American Association of Law Librarians annual meeting in Portland.
Thank you for being here. When you speak, please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Great. This is a first for me. My name's Laura Orr, and I'm the Washington County Law Librarian. I'm also a Portland resident, so I know all of you, which is nice. I even voted for all of you, but I shouldn't admit that. I may not do it again, so watch your step. I know that most people don't know what law librarians are, and I thought I'd take this chance to put a face on law librarians. And it's a town of lots of librarians generally, but not law librarians. I'm joined today by my colleague, my counterpart here in Multnomah County, Jackie Jerkins, who you all may know is the Multnomah Law Librarian. And I was hoping to be joined by others, but they're not here. About 4 years ago, when the National Association of Law Librarians told us that we were going to be the host city, we got very nervous, and we warned them about the bridges and the construction and the sidewalks in TriMet, and they didn't listen to us, and I'm really happy they didn't. because we're just thrilled.
So am I.
I know. It's. We were trying to be realistic. I'm on TriMet hours and hours a day, so I have a fair view of this, of the State of the Union. But they're coming, and it's wonderful, and there are about 2,000 of the law librarians and their families and all the exhibitors. So what I wanted to tell you about a little bit was what law librarians are, and I'll do that in a real nutshell. So when you see them on the street, if you see them in Powell's, if you see them wandering around with bags, greet them. Law librarians are the wonks, the policy, the students of government, the policy wonks, the students of government of the library world. So you actually have a lot in common with them. And we not only manage our own budgets, our own businesses, and we also daily answer thousands of questions across the state and across the country. People ask us how to create LLCs. They ask us how to research legislative history. They ask us what it means to consent to treatment. We get distraught parents wondering how young their, how old their kids need to be before they can be left home alone. We get a full range of questions from lawyers, from judges, from ordinary people. So, and then we get our favorite questions, which is somebody calling from out of state wondering what the statute of limitations is on a misdemeanor charge, when in fact we know that all they really want to do is know when they can come back to Oregon. So if you see us around, say hello, and we have a lot of formal events. I have contact information on the sheets I handed out if you want to attend any of the formal events here, David Pogue. There are also a lot of informal events. I'm the Oregon Legal Research blogger, and I'm hosting a large number of bloggers on a Sunday afternoon at the Green Dragon, and it's going to be a beer law library blogger, and Bogdansky, if you'll forgive me for that, and they'll just be around, and it should be a lot of fun. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Horn.
Just wanted to comment as a recovering lawyer. I wanted to attest to the good work of the law librarians, and as a confirmed Luddite, grateful for the help that I used to get from folks in your field to access information.
And still do. We still have
grants. I'm sorry. As a confirmed Luddite, I'm grateful for the help I got as a lawyer, but I actually am going to try to make one of your workshops because I am technologically so deficient that there might be some help for me. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Frankly, I'm a little worried about having 2,000 law librarians gathered at one time, what it may be due to the civic fabric of our city. I've heard law librarians and partying can be a little frightening.
The reputation that precedes us from the hotel business, which is great, is they say the law librarians drink like fish, but they don't trash the rooms.
Ah.
We also tip well.
Well, that's nice. Thank you.
You know, you did mention that you would like some kind of welcoming letter. I'd be glad to write a letter if you could give me the information to the group, so as they come here, they recognize that Portland welcomes them, in spite of what Commissioner Leonard said.
Just a worry.
Pay attention to the commissioner.
That it?
That's all the communications.
Okay. Going to move to the consent agenda. Commissioner, wish to pull any item from the consent agenda? Any member of this audience wish to pull any item from the consent agenda?
Yes.
You're denied.
Point of order.
You're denied. As the ruling officer of the council, I consider your conduct solely based on your willingness to be an obstruction to the proceedings of council. Therefore, I'm moving you out of order.
Point of order,
thank you. Excuse me, you can't call a point of order.
Not suspend this particular ordinance because
it is
part of the
Excuse me, sir. I ruled you out of order. Please call a vote.
Adams.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Potter.
Aye. Please read the 9:30 time, sir.
Item 766, ensure that computer systems no longer needed by the city are refurbished for use by community members that any unusable computer parts are disposed of in an environmentally responsible manner by local recyclers.
I want to thank Commissioner Saltzman and his office for working with my office and the other offices to create a solution to our surplus computers out in the community. I also want to thank Free Geek for taking this opportunity to get the computers in the hands of students who need them. And the partnership is a great way to help the city's children using the city's current resources. So with that, Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. I am pleased today to introduce the first step in establishing a partnership, a city partnership, with the nonprofit Free Geek, to ensure that computers which are no longer needed by the city are refurbished for use by the community, people who cannot afford computers themselves, and to get as many computers as possible into the hands of students who do not have computers in the home. Besides these community benefits, this partnership will also ensure that any of the city's computer parts that cannot be reused will be recycled by Free Geek in an environmentally sound manner by local recyclers. To explain more about the resolution, I'd like to introduce Sheila Pete from my staff, Jeff Robinson from Free Geek, and Carol Brune from the Bureau of Technology Services. Sheila, take it away.
Thank you, Dan. Almost a year ago, our office began working with Free Geek and BTS on this partnership. After many meetings and discussions, we discovered that Free Geek could meet the needs of the city in disposing of decommissioned computers, and Free Geek brought the added benefits of getting our city computers into the hands of community members at no cost, as well as local recycling for parts that cannot be reused. Right now, the city sends decommissioned computer parts back to the manufacturer for disposal at an additional cost to the city. And currently, the city disposes of approximately 700 to 1,000 computer systems annually. A truly exciting aspect of this partnership is Free Geek's commitment to create an outreach plan to reach Portland students who may not have computers at their homes. According to a recent survey, the presence of computers in the home is directly proportional to income level. Low-income children are less likely to have a computer in the home, and disadvantaged schools are less likely to provide regular computer use for children. Access to computers can be extremely influential in a child's life. In fact, a child is more likely to graduate from high school with a computer than young adults without computer access at home. With the apparent digital divide between wealthy and low-income children in Portland, this partnership will provide low-income children in Portland. This partnership will provide school-age children with the much-needed access to computers. And now Jeff Robinson of Free Geek will talk more about their organization and plans under this partnership.
Thank you. Started in 2000, Free Geek is a 501c3 not-for-profit community organization that reuses and recycles used technology and provides computers, education, internet access, and job skills training to volunteers. We accept donations of computers and electronics, reuse everything we can, and recycle obsolete equipment. Most for-profit recyclers have a 5 to 7% reuse rate. In 2007, we reused 25% of the computers that came into Free Geek. Free Geek promotes community service and involvement. Thousands of people have volunteered for us. For many of them, it was their first time volunteering. At any given time, we have about 200 volunteers active. We have two main volunteer programs, adoption and build. In our adoption program, we give away a computer to anyone, regardless of age or ability, in exchange for 24 hours of volunteer service. At the end of that time, we also give them a class on how to use their computer. Many of these folks have never even touched a computer before. Adopters also get a year of tech support through us. Our build program is an education-based program. Free Geek instructors teach the build volunteer the process of identifying hardware and assembling systems, and in exchange, the volunteer builds 5 computers for Free Geek and takes the 6th one home. Essentially, builders assemble the systems that the adoption volunteers take home, while the adopters receive incoming donations from the public and disassemble obsolete technology. We are currently expanding our educational aspect. Last year, we hired an education coordinator to help us develop new classes and refine our curriculum. We now offer free classes for volunteers that go beyond what is taught in the basic class. They range from how to type to editing digital photos to a super adopter class where you can learn more about your computer. We try to serve as much of the community as we can, and we're always trying to expand our reach. To this end, we started reaching out to schools and students in a way we haven't been able to before. We currently have several groups of students that volunteer, some in build, some in adoption, and a few individuals in our high school interns program. Expanding in these areas is right in line with our mission. In addition to giving computers to individuals, we also give grants of computers to community organizations, nonprofits, schools, and the like. Free Geek continues to have a great impact on the Portland community. In our 8 years, we've given away over 5,000 computers and over 1,000 in the last year alone. 80 to 90% of these have gone away, gone to the Portland area. This is also not to mention all the environmental benefits that come along with reusing computers over recycling. The more computers we get, the more we give away, and this resolution would go a long way to help us accomplish our mission. I'd like to thank Sheila and Shannon Callahan and everyone who made this, brought this forward. I'd like to thank you all for your time.
Carol?
The Bureau of Technology Services is pleased to support this resolution, which will have a direct benefit to our local community. The partnership between the city and FreeGeek will allow computers to be placed in the hands of Portland citizens who might not otherwise be able to afford them. BTS will be amending our administrative rule regarding the disposal of IT equipment in order to implement this change, and we are proud to be part of this plan and to provide this opportunity to our citizens.
Thank you all very much. That completes our invited testimony. Has a question?
I'll get the hang of this, sorry. When computer systems are refurbished and then recycled, in effect, how much of the data that was on the computer is actually removed? And is there, you know, I sometimes hear the term cookies and other kinds of things. Does anything stay on the computer, or do we have the technology to essentially wash it clean?
I'll speak to the first part. The city has an obligation to make certain that data is scrubbed from the computers before they go to FreeGeek or anyone to be refurbished, and I'll turn to Jeff to talk about what they would do.
I was just wondering if Commissioner Fish had a particular fear about that.
We certainly make sure we certainly wipe.
I just want to say, A, I'm not taking the bait. And if he continues, the mayor gets to rule him out of order.
He's being hazed.
I actually think the mayor finds it a little amusing. So I don't think he's going to rule me out of order.
Please
We're waiting for your answer, too.
We certainly take great pains to wipe all data from the computers. In this arrangement, the data would be gone before it got to us, but any computer that comes into FreeGeek is wiped thoroughly. The hard drives, all data is wiped completely off the computers.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, folks. How many folks do we have signed up to testify?
We have one person signed up, Andy Seaton.
I'm going to rule Mr. Seaton is not allowed to testify. Mr. Seaton, as a presiding officer of this council, I find your conduct is only designed to obstruct the continuing process of city government. And if you wish to communicate with the city council, we have communications that you can sign up for anytime you wish. Until you come before us on a commission, I'm going to rule you out of order, and you're not allowed to testify.
Pardon me. I'm actually a volunteer. Excuse me. At FreeGeek, and
Excuse
what
me.
I'd actually like to testify.
You're not allowed to testify. You're not allowed to testify. The only one signed up, right?
Yes.
Please call the vote.
Adams.
Well, I just want to thank all involved for putting this together. It's very innovative. Keeps us on the cutting edge of reuse as part of the reuse recycle. And what's the other one?
Reduce.
Reduce. Thank you.
Yes.
Aye.
Fish. Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I want to thank FreeGeek for working with us to establish this partnership, Bureau of Technology Services for working out the technical details, Shannon Callahan in my office for her work, and last but not least, Sheila Pete, who has worked in my office for the last 2 years while she worked on her bachelor's degree at PSU. Sheila will be graduating this weekend on the Dean's List.
Wow.
And has also been the president of the PSU NAACP chapter. She'll be leaving my office shortly to start the next phase of her career. Thank you, Sheila, for all your work on this partnership with FreeGeek and for all the work you've done for me as a member of my staff. Aye.
Potter.
I'd like to thank FreeGeek for what they do for our community. Your contributions, not only by providing these computers at a very low cost or free to
young people. It's also the recycling aspect that I'm very pleased with. So I appreciate what you do. And Sheila, I know that I talked to you earlier this week, and you were concerned about your testimony. I think you did a great job. And it was your first time, and apparently it's your last time. So good luck to you in your future career. I vote aye. Please read the next item.
Item 767, extend the 10-year property tax exemption for the MLK Wygant Apartments for 19 years to preserve the affordability of the project units to low-income households.
Hi. I'm Barbara Sack from the Planning Bureau, and I'm here to present the Planning Commission's recommendation on this tax exemption request. The project owners, represented by Jane Oberding, are requesting a 19-year extension of the tax exemption for the MLK Wygant Apartments. The reason for this request is that so the project can continue to offer rents affordable to low-income households for the duration of the period of affordability required by PDC, which ends in 2027. The state statutes that enable this program allow a tax exemption to be granted to existing projects that are subject or will be subject to a public assistance contract to provide low-income housing through June 30th of the year that the affordability agreement expires. This project originally received a 10-year tax exemption on the improvement value of the property in 1997 under the city's new multiple unit housing program, which is available in the central city and urban renewal areas. The 10-year exemption is set to expire at the end of the month on June 30th. This project is located on King Boulevard between Going and Wygant Streets and is located in the Oregon Convention Center urban renewal area, which is why it qualifies for the tax exemption. This is a three-story project consisting of three buildings with 38 rental units. This project has a lot of large units for a rental project this close into the center of the city. It has 11 three-bedroom units and 2 four-bedroom units. It currently is subject to 3 affordability agreements. The first is the condition of approval of the original ordinance that granted this tax exemption. And that affordability agreement requires that 60% of the units remain affordable to low-income households for the 10-year term of the exemption. It also has 2 other affordability agreements that cover 20% of the units. And these are regulatory agreements through PDC and the state of Oregon. And they both require that 20% of the units, which is 8 units, remain affordable to low-income households at 50% median family income. And the state agreement lasts 1 year longer than PDC's. After the expiration of this 10-year tax exemption, the owner would only be required to maintain 20 units as affordable. The rest could go market rate. The owner will enter into an agreement with PDC to keep all the units in the project affordable to low-income households if they are granted this tax exemption extension. The alternative would be for the owner to raise the rents on the remaining 30 units in order to pay the property taxes. From what I understand, the owner has a choice here in this matter, and they would prefer to keep the project affordable. This project is located in an area that has experienced some gentrification. It houses a lot of families. There's about 60 children, according to the owner, on site, and this project's close to King School. And they would prefer to keep the project affordable but need the tax exemption. On May 8th, PDC's Loan Committee approved the recommendation for the tax exemption extension. It's PDC's role to make a ruling on whether the tax exemption is necessary for the economic feasibility of the project. In order to maintain this project as a low-income project, it does need the full tax exemption. And the internal rate of return would be estimated at 1.83%. which is under the maximum of the 10% internal rate of return allowed by the city code. The state of Oregon, which is the lender in first position on this property, has sent a letter to PDC supporting the tax exemption, and they find that keeping all the units affordable to low-income households is also consistent with their loan agreement. Planning Commission reviewed this request on May 20th and held a public hearing. Their role is to assess the public benefits that the project provides. They unanimously approved the extension of the tax exemption. They found that the public benefit that's offered is the preservation of 30 units as low-income housing, including 13 large units that can serve families with children. They also found that the term of the tax extending the term of the tax exemption supports the city's comprehensive plan housing policy, which calls for encouraging the retention of existing rental housing at rent levels affordable to area residents. This project's located in the Albina community, which has experienced some gentrification, so the owner feels that if they wanted to, they could get much higher rents for some of the units. So this is my presentation. John Marshall is here from PDC, if you have any questions about the financial analysis, and Jane Oberding is here if you'd like to talk to her about the project.
So Barbara, the entire council supports these kinds of abatements. The concern that has arisen in the past has been what we're doing to monitor the units to be sure that the eligibility requirements are applicable to the people renting the units. What kind of systems do we have in place to audit and or monitor that the units are being rented to people who meet the criterion for the abatement?
I'm going to ask PDC staff to come up. PDC monitors the affordability of the units.
Good morning. Please state your name for the record when you speak.
Good morning. My name is John Marshall. Mr. Leonard, one of the conditions of the extension of the tax abatement will be that the owner of the property will sign an extended use agreement. That will allow PDC to continue what it normally does, and that is to do an annual review of the performance of the properties financially. That's what it does since the ordinance was passed by City Council. And so what will happen?
But John, you are familiar with the issue that the county raised with us some time back, that some of these very units were actually being rented to people who did not meet the qualifications for the abatement. So the question is, what systems have you installed to be able to monitor that beyond just them certifying it? What does it mean when you're going to review annually the records of the owner? Does it mean that you're going to ask for tax information like 1040s of the occupants that live there? How do you determine that, in fact, the units are being occupied by people who qualify for the abatement and not by people who wouldn't qualify?
Well, there's two questions. One is PDC is tasked with doing the financial analysis, and that is, and for that, we will get the performance of the property, what the income is from the units, what the expenses of the property are, what the investment of the owner is, and then we can do the financial analysis to see whether they are exceeding the threshold. The second question that you're talking about is the actual compatibility with the affordability agreements for a rental project. And the owner will also be providing statements that show what, and they have been doing this in the past, what the income is of the residents there. It also provides a lot of other information that we use to report to the city. The owner previously has voluntarily kept the rents below the rents they could charge, and we will be monitoring to see whether that happens in the future.
So you get evidence that satisfies you that people that occupy those units do in fact qualify based on their income level?
Correct. Correct.
Margaret?
It also has the number of families, the number of kids,
okay.
And a lot of other information as well.
I just at minimum want to reinforce that we are very concerned about that, because it actually called into question the integrity of the entire program when we found that it wasn't being monitored, and that doesn't serve anybody well. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yes, I know. I've seen some reports, and I believe some of that refers to home ownership as opposed to rental projects.
From our perspective, it doesn't make any difference.
Yes.
When we're giving tax abatements, we're giving tax abatements.
Yes.
We're not collecting revenue we would otherwise collect, and we like doing that for this population. We don't like doing it if people are taking advantage of it that don't qualify for it, whether they're renting the unit or owning the unit.
That's important to PDC as well.
Okay.
Margaret Bax, Housing Policy Manager, City of Portland. Commissioner Leonard, the issue that the county found with the practice treatments was, in fact, with primarily with the home ownership program and the monitoring of that program. And the this particular tax abatement is in the one of the multifamily rental properties, which we do have a much more extensive system in place for monitoring both the rents and the eligibility of the tenants, and they provide reports annually to PDC, and it's a very robust, actually, reporting and monitoring system. It's the same system we use with for reporting for the federal funds and the state funds. So it's the area where there was primarily an issue on the tax payment was, in fact, with the home ownership side and some of the single family, and some of them were condos, so they were in multifamily projects, but they were, in fact, ownership units as opposed to the rental properties that
right.
this people
and,
want.
And you heard what I just said to John. From our perspective, it doesn't matter.
We
just want to make sure whether they're buying the unit or renting the unit that they're qualified, because then if we find that that's being abused, then it calls into question the program, which doesn't serve the population we want to serve well.
Randy, can I just comment that as the new guy here, this issue is very important to me.
Right.
For the reasons that you've stated. And as I'm getting up to speed on how we do the compliance and enforcement, let me tackle that and
right.
then report back to you and the council if they wish
on
what
that.
Our systems are. I know we can always strengthen them.
Yeah.
I used to live in a city that had rent stabilization and rent control where there
right.
was rampant fraud
right.
and challenges in terms of monitoring. And I think whatever our level is, we can probably always do better, and I'll take a close look
right.
at that.
Great. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Further questions? Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
Anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
No one signed up.
Okay. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
The council has been on record for some years of being very concerned about how we do abatements. So I don't want anybody to misunderstand my concern. I don't normally think that abatements for a typical market rate housing is appropriate for people who are making median income and above. But abatements such as this are very appropriate, and I think not only appropriate, important to allow families who couldn't otherwise do it have decent housing in the inner city. The only caveat is, as we've discussed, to make sure that we're monitoring it to the level that the right people are able to take advantage of that, and people who could otherwise afford market rate housing are not being subsidized by taxpayers. So I appreciate the attention to that. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I'm pleased to support this. I'm, particularly impressed. Well, it's noteworthy that they have such many three-bedroom and four-bedroom units that are so important for families in the city. So I'm pleased to support this. Aye.
Potter.
Aye. Please read the 10:15 time certain.
Item 768. Support Multnomah Youth Commission proposal to establish fareless public transportation for all 6th through 12th grade public school students in Portland and Multnomah County.
This is a resolution that has been supported by both myself and Commissioner Adams. The presenters today are from the Multnomah Youth Commission, Lisa Frank, Jack Nickel, and Savannah Gregory. And these folks have been doing a wonderful job of going around and gaining support for a youth pass that all students 6th grade through high school in the city of Portland would be able to ride our transit system for free. And so this is a project that they have taken on and that are running with it, and I'm very, very proud of what they've done. And so please go ahead, and whoever wishes to speak first.
Good morning. I'm Jack McNichol. I'm the co-chair of the Multnomah Youth Commission, and I just graduated from Grand High School.
Good morning. My name is Lisa Frank. Thank you for the introduction, Mayor Potter. And I'm a policy liaison for the Multnomah Youth Commission, and next year I'll be a senior at Lincoln High School.
My name is Savannah Gregory. I currently attend Portland Youth Builders, and I'm a new member of Multnomah Youth Commission.
So we just wanted to give a brief overview of what the Youth Commission is. The Multnomah Youth Commission is a group of 42 young people aged 13 to 21 from throughout Multnomah County, representing more than 20 schools and five different school districts. The commission is a joint volunteer commission, which provides policy advice to the City of Portland and Multnomah County regarding youth services and youth engagement in local government. We work with the City Council and the Board of County Commissioners to help improve services for youth and engage young people at the political process at the political process at the local level. Currently, our work is guided in large part by the Youth Bill of Rights, a document created by over 3,000 youths in an effort spearheaded by the Youth Commission. The Bill of Rights has been adopted as the official policy of both the city and the county, and the Youth Commission is working hard to make the goals set out in the bill a reality. We are working both as a commission and with community organizations to implement the bill's provision. We're here this morning to talk with you about one of our implementation efforts, Youth Pass.
Youth Pass is a program that would give all students in grades 6 through 12 in the Portland and Multnomah County access to free public transportation. The way this would work is that students would have a sticker placed on their student ID card that would allow them unlimited access to TriMet buses, MAX trains, and the Portland streetcar. The program would be funded through a business energy tax credit that is offered by the state of Oregon. This tax credit is currently being used to fund a very similar program successfully in Lane County. Our goal is to begin this program in September. But in order for that to happen, we need all of your support. We are urging TriMet to apply for the funds that are available through this tax credit and to have a program in place by the start of the next school year, which is this September. We have gathered a lot of community support, as evidenced by the letters of support you have in your packets, and we are here today to ask that you join us in encouraging TriMet to offer this opportunity to students of Portland and Multnomah County. We would also like to thank Mayor Potter and Commissioner Adams for co-sponsoring this resolution. And we want to thank Commissioner Saltzman and Commissioner Leonard for providing letters of support for this project. Your support has helped us make it this far, and we know that it will help us reach our ultimate goal. In addition, Commissioner Fish, we would like to congratulate you on your recent election and welcome you to the council, and we look forward to working closely with you on this and other Youth Commission initiatives in the future.
Youth Pass is truly a win-win situation for everyone, particularly students. Some of the many benefits of Youth Pass are that it reduces transportation barriers for students, which allows easier and more equitable access to schools, government services, jobs, and extracurricular activities that are so important in ensuring student success. It also reduces traffic in Portland. Currently, about 25% of the cars on the road, according to the U.S. Department of Transportation, in morning traffic are parents driving their kids to school. So we're trying to get some of those cars off the road. The program also creates lifetime transit users. If you had a free bus pass in high school and rode the bus all the time, you're much more likely to ride the bus when you're an adult. And it gives the students opportunities to participate in educational opportunities outside the classroom and throughout the community.
We realize that this is a very large and complex project and that we don't have all the answers to the tough questions about logistics that it presents at this moment, but we are very encouraged to see the program succeeding in Lane County, and we know that we have the strength, commitment, and skill to make it happen in our community too. Naturally, TriMet is concerned about some of the logistics and details, but they realize the importance of this project, and we are here to work with other organizations and governmental agencies like yourselves to help TriMet make this a reality.
We're working with Multnomah County, city staff, local school boards, and TriMet to make this proposal happen. On May 28th, we presented to the TriMet Board of Directors, and we received a high level of interest and support. On Monday, we presented to the PPS School Board and received a similar encouragement and support. And we're going to be presenting to the County Board of Commissioners very soon. I'd like to just reiterate that this is a win-win proposal for everyone, especially young people, and we would love to work with you to continue to better the lives of students throughout Portland and Multnomah County. And this is Savannah, one of our new youth commissioners, and she's going to read a statement of support from Port PBS School Board Representative Antoinette Myers.
Great introduction. My name is Antoinette Myers. For the past year, I've served on the Board of Education of Portland Public Schools and student representatives. I graduated this year from Grant High School, and I'm headed to Scripps College in Claremont, California. I would like to express my strongest support for the effort to bring free public education to the youth of Portland and Multnomah County. As a student myself, and as a student representative on Portland Public School Board, I know the transportation challenges that young people face in our city. I myself do not have a car, and I rely on the public transportation, but unfortunately the cost riding on TriMet can be a burden on me and my family. I know that the burden is also great and often much greater for on my fellow students. I also support this project because I'm a shining example of youth leadership in our community. Given my experience serving on the board of Portland Public Schools, I am a large supporter of student voice in our community. It is ingrained in me. Anybody in any type of leadership position in our city should be honored to have such dedicated students in our city.